Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Charity Digital Podcast. Today we're talking about everyone's favourite subject, fundraising. Fundraising is vital for charities to be able to continue their hard work for the communities they serve. This is obvious. But in 2022, when we're facing financial uncertainty, a cost of living crisis, and the word recession has been reappearing in the news, how we fundraise becomes even more important. As we saw during the early days of the pandemic, demand for services rises during times of crisis, and charities need to be able to raise enough money to meet that challenge. But as well we all know, fundraising is not a constant thing. New fundraising methods emerge, new platforms, new processes. It's evolving all the time and it's up to us to keep up. Thankfully, we have plenty of people keeping an eye on the status of things in the fundraising world, not least software providers Blackboard, who have released the 2022 edition of their annual Status of the UK Fundraising Report. Some of the takeaways from this year's report include a continued decline in charity income for the third consecutive year, signs that recruitment and retention of fundraising talent is becoming a challenge, and reports that while many charities are investing in technology, only a few are getting the most from it. To discuss these findings and what fundraising looks like in 2022 in their own experience, I'm joined in today's podcast by Emily Martin, Senior Fundraising Manager at Mass Participation at Great Ormond Street Hospital Children's Charity, James Grant, Head of Individual Giving and Legacies at SAFA, and Philip Hunt, Senior Manager of Demand Marketing at Blackboard, and one of the people involved in the Status of Fundraising report. So let's start there. What sort of trends are we seeing at the moment according to the report? Phil, if you'd start with.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll start off by saying thank you for the intro. And whilst I am part of the team that pulls together the Status of Fundraising report, I am a very small part of it. And most of the credit needs to go to our excellent content marketer who does all of the research. So Louise Sparks gets all of the credit. I just get to show up and do events like this today. But what we found from this year's report is that for a continuing or a third year in a row now, organisations are continuing to report a decrease in voluntary income. So what we mean by that is that in 2019, 49% of organisations were reporting an income growth. That's down to just 32% this year that are reporting an income growth. Now, that's not necessarily a surprise as we spent 2 years in a pandemic. That's hit some income streams like events in particular very hard. And no surprise, the pandemic's cited as the biggest driver of decline. With about 66% of those people who are seeing a decline saying that it's related to the pandemic. What's interesting after the pandemic, though, is that there are four other factors that are weighted roughly evenly by most of our respondents around what was driving the decline in income. And that's, I think, something that we've probably discussed this morning. Two of them are external factors that are difficult to, you know, managed directly, but two of them are internal factors. And I think you mentioned a couple of them in the intro there about being adequately resourced and having people with the right skills. So all of those things are things that are equally impacting the charity's ability to raise funds. And some of them are directly in our control and some directly or out of our direct control.
That's a lot, isn't it, going on in the fundraising world in 2022, I think. Is this sort of matching up with your experience, James? Are you noticing these trends in your own sort of world?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, within my own charity, perhaps not so much, but I try and, you know, have a sort of wide view of the sector. For example, one of the moderators on the quite enormous now fundraising chat group on Facebook. And so, you know, talking to other charities, yes, certainly seeing those trends, those challenges. I think the saddest bit is the finding it hard to recruit talent these days from everything that Phil said. It seems a shame. I think the charity sector is still seen as, you know, a sort of secondary career. You know, I've been on panels for my old school, for example, and, you know, the law and medicine and finance ones are busy. And there I was talking to about six people. Such a shame, because I think people don't realise the opportunities and they just focus on salaries. Frankly, I don't think the salaries are that bad at senior level within the charity sector. Actually, I defend them. In terms of income growth, it's a really interesting one when people talk about this and you hear these sort of slightly alarming figures of, you know, 32% of charities' income growth, particularly for charities, and we are one of them, who have specific needs to raise significantly more money next year and the year after. And how do you do that? You can go down the route of cost savings, of course, and then, of course, you're not bringing in that talent. You can invest in fundraising, and I think it's a dangerous thing to say invest in just fundraising, because, of course, we all, I'm sure, have Marcom's teams who support us in our fundraising are integral to it. In fact, we've just sort of merged our two directorates now by appointing a director of fundraising and marketing communications. We're hoping that brings everything, you know, closer together. We have other things that we need to communicate about, of course, people coming forward for help and recruiting volunteers. But really, that support for fundraising, investing in that, and helping us to achieve what are now, you know, pretty ambitious targets, because we have those specific reasons why we need to raise. Pretty sure we need to raise £1 million more each year over the next 3 years. That is a huge, huge challenge. And, you know, one hopes that, and we've talked about results already, that's going to be the direction of travel, because to effectively fundraise, you do need the resource to do it.
That's really interesting. I remember there was, I think there was a statistic in the report that said more than half of charities have managed to meet or exceed their targets, which is really promising. But yeah, it's going to be definitely a stretch and a tough time, I think. Emily, what about you? Have you seen a lot of the trends from the report in your fundraising and your expertise?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of what James said is what we're also seeing. Charity, I mean, us as a charity, I think we're kind of meeting our targets at the moment, which is great. And everyone's been working so hard to achieve those targets. But I think similarly, like I am listening to other people who work in different charities, I am hearing those other stories of a bit more of a struggle to hit those income targets. And I think the resource side of things is a big part of that. At Gosh Charity, we have recently just gone through a redesign with the focus of recruiting more talent within the charity. And that's only happened relatively recently. But I think it's a really positive step for us. And we've definitely taken that point of view, like you said, James, of investment in not just the fundraising teams, but in our Marcon's teams, brand across the whole charity, really to really invest in talent and digital in particular, as well, really focusing on that.
Brilliant. I think, sorry, Phil, go on.
I think there's something interesting in what you were saying about investing in like multiple teams, because when we do look in the report at what did drive growth for organisations, the biggest driver of growth after the pandemic, which, you know, did help some organisations, it was, I suppose, highlighted a cause or a mission. So if we take that out of the drivers of growth, the thing that really drove them was then exceptional gifts. And what we mean by exceptional gifts is major donors or legacies or corporates, and those relationships that you're building over the long term being the ones that are driving more sustainable growth. In all of those instances, it's planned behaviour, even if it's indirectly planned, because it takes time to cultivate those relationships, identify those opportunities. So that long-term investment and a long-term strategy is what was driving organisations to be successful beyond the sort of the more day-to-day challenges that people are experiencing. And to come back to one of the points that you made, Laura, there are, even though we've seen income decline or the amount of organisations that are growing decline, what we haven't seen a decline in is the number of organisations who are achieving their fundraising targets. So that's actually stayed fairly steady for the last 4 or 5 years, which is, you can read that in a good way. And there are challenges. The pandemic has been a real challenge for a lot of organisations, but the sector is both resilient and able to anticipate and react to those challenges. So we are setting our kind of stall effectively to manage around those issues that we're seeing. So whilst the headline can be quite worrying or concerning about a decline in the number of charities that are growing, the sector as a whole is being resilient and is no more likely or less likely to succeed now. Most people are still hitting their targets when they're being mindful about how they can, you know, perform in this environment.
So it's not a time for panic.
can I just talk, Phil, about these exceptional gifts that you mentioned? I think there's a danger in those, because I think these exceptional gifts are probably more likely to be one-offs than any other kind of gift. You know, a legacy clearly is a one-off. Mm-hmm. During the first COVID lockdown, launched an emergency response fund and talked about the way our services were changing. And that actually unlocked some government money. Fantastic. You know, and that's helped us hit our targets, but clearly was going to be a one-off. So I do worry about sustainability of relying on this. I mean, the corporate gift could be a one-off. You never quite know. So, you know, when forecasting for the year after, I'm always, and my colleagues, I'm sure, would agree, I'm always slightly nervous about, you know, when we've hit targets or gone over targets because of these exceptional gifts. So I think there will come a point where, you know, hopefully not, but there will come a point where that doesn't happen and then suddenly there's a problem.
Yeah, and that's where it comes to building it into the forecast for the following year, isn't it? We always ask the question, why did our income decline? And there's an option there for, we couldn't repeat a gift from the previous year. So it's not necessarily unplanned, it's anticipated. And that's, I think, the difference that you're making there. If something brilliant happens, we shouldn't just fold that into our expectations for every year, because that way you're going to be really struggling to attain your goals in the next sort of 12-month period.
And when, you know, for example, a charity's income, a third of it is legacy giving, and, you know, I'm talking about a real example here, and that has exceeded targets for the last 5 or 6 years, there will come a time when it doesn't, and you know, that could be pretty problematic. And so we're trying to think, well, how can we build up, you know, more predictable, sustainable income? That's a big challenge.
Yeah, I think it's not just about sustainable, but diversifying. So it's making sure that you have those multiple streams of income coming in, so you're not becoming solely reliant on, for example, legacies or anything like that. And I think something that the pandemic has taught everyone across the whole world is that you need to be able to be agile, and companies need to be able to change and adapt quite quickly. And I think with the current like political and economic climate that we live in, that still holds true. And I think we all need to look at how we can diversify our income streams and make sure that we can change these income streams and lean on some at certain points and pull away from them at others, to make sure that we're doing the best for all of our very valuable causes.
That brings us quite neatly onto the second question. So how are charities sort of adapting to the challenges in a changing fundraising environment, really? Especially, so Emily, you work in mass participation. So how is that's changed a lot, right? So 2020, everything being remote, and now everything's starting to come back. How are you adapting to that sort of situation?
Yeah, I think, mass participation has been quite a tricky one over the past years. So, I mean, as an example, my role used to be in our owned events team. So I used to work on our physical events, putting those on, and I've actually moved over and now lead our virtual events team. And then I think that just typifies the change in how charities have approached events recently. I think with the pandemic more or less coming to an end, obviously not quite there, I think all these physical events are coming back, but they are still struggling slightly, I think, with signups in particular. But we are still seeing quite good activation rates and average gifts. But we have put quite a bit of investment into our virtual events. Now, we never had a virtual events team before, and now we have a dedicated team to look at virtual events. And I think that just connects back to what I was saying about diversifying the income. We're making sure that we have those different streams within mass participation. I think particularly with mass participation or public fundraising in general, it it can be hit quite hard by external factors. And it has been a struggle, and the team has worked really hard to try and get to where we are today. But I think, yeah, it's about being agile, being flexible, being willing to test things and be willing to fail fast as well. And I think that's one of the great things with digital or virtual products. They're a lot easier to test things quickly with. And then I think also looking at new technology. So particularly thinking about Facebook challenges, and that's been a really big thing in the charity sector the last couple of years, and like just social media fundraising, keeping an eye on all the changes that are constantly happening there. So just keeping an eye on new technology. I think a big thing that we're focusing on to try and adapt to the current climate is looking at more bespoke, personalized stewardship as well. So looking at behavioral comms, really kind of trying to tailor the stewardship for our supporters. But also looking at that stewardship, not just within the event, but to get the lifetime value out of these supporters, so that you're hopefully retaining all these people that we're bringing in through mass participation events, stewarding them, trying to connect our cause with them, passing them on to whether it might be like our corporate team or our legacy and gifts team, so that hopefully we can really make the most out of our amazing supporters that join us through our mass participation events. We really see our mass participation events as an acquisition tool, but we're trying to really focus on how we can take that further, essentially.
Seems like 2022 sort of a bit of time to take stock of everything and then build the foundations for things after, as you said, the pandemic's not over, but after that.
Definitely. Sort of I've definitely seen 2020, I've called it our test and learn year a little bit, my team, particularly within virtual events. We've taken it as a bit of a test and learn, and we're reviewing everything and seeing how we can take forward our virtual events into our portfolio for next year.
Brilliant. Is that something you're seeing too, James? Are you seeing a lot of testing and learning?
Yes, I think so. I mean, like everyone in 2020, and I was actually head of corporate and events here at the time, we went virtual. And the great thing about it, some were successful, some were not. And the ones that were successful, we try and still do, even though the world has opened up again to an extent. I was really interested, Emily, in you talking about events as an acquisition tool. Completely agree. I think it's the most fantastic acquisition tool, actually, because these are people who are properly stewarded. They have a fantastic experience, most likely anyway, on the day. It might have been completely new to the charity, may even have chosen on the basis of the event, not the charity, but then you have the opportunity to do that stewardship and that storytelling and inspire them into other ways of giving or supporting or even volunteering. They completely agree with that. And supporter acquisition, supporter experience, these are the words we probably say most at the moment at our charity and certainly wider in the sector. Acquisition, yeah, 100%. And the terrible truth of this is that acquisition is becoming more important because we are losing supporters. So, it's a bit of a hackneyed cliche, but the old leaky bucket, you've got to keep pouring people in at the top because they are coming out the bottom, unfortunately, with heartbreaking, letters explaining why they're ceasing their support after 30 years of regular giving and explaining why. And, this is the challenge we face. So actually, yes, I mean, not just mass participation, but supporter acquisition, so, so key. But yes, no, very much in agreement with what Emily said, yeah.
And Phil, so we're seeing, I think there was a lot of talk about investing in technology there as well. So is that something that, I think there was a stat in the report that I read, something about the more people investing in technology, the more they're getting the most out of it. Is that right?
Well, on the tech side of things, Blackboard's obviously a software supplier and that's what we know. So I'll defer very much to Emily and James on the fundraising side of things. But we always ask the question about technology in the report every year. And sort of a lot of what has just been discussed, you know, people understand the value of technology and trying different channels and, you know, pivoting their approaches. You know, 80% of people say that tech helps them build better relationships. 56% of people were saying they're investing in tech, that they're using data to help inform decision making. But then we ask the question, do you get the most out of your technology? And 45% of people say they don't. And that's the only question with where people, more people disagreed with the statement than otherwise. So there's more people getting or not maximizing their tech than there people are maximizing their tech. So I think there's something in there about technology just being part of the answer. You need to know what you're trying to achieve and then resource it effectively, get the tools that you need to do that. Because that's what's going to drive value out of your technology rather than just getting a shiny new piece of kit because that's something that's there and available. You know, it only takes one person to start adding data in a different way or exporting their own Excel files, and suddenly all of your infrastructure is starting to look slightly different and nothing's playing nicely together. So because that is such a stark divide, we were able to dig into it a bit more to work out, well, why do people get more out of tech and what's different between those organizations that do or don't? And the first is that organizations that are getting the most out of their tech are much more likely to be prioritizing long-term success. So 73% to 50% of people say that that's a strategic priority for them. They're also dramatically more likely to be digitally mature. So 40% of organizations who are getting the most out of their tech say that they are a digitally mature organization. By that, we mean that they're putting sort of technology and solutions kind of at the center of their strategy and then building around that, how they utilize those tools rather than bolting tools onto things. That's compared to just 6% of people who aren't getting the most out of their tech. So that's the biggest difference of any of these drivers. The final point, though, and I think this ties into something that James was just saying then, is that you're always trying to fill up the leaky bucket. You're always adding more people in the top because you're always going to have attrition. But organizations that say they get most out of their tech are more likely to be gaining supporters than losing. So that's a margin of 37% to 21% for non-tech savvy orgs. So it's a real material difference that getting it right, you know, will have. But it's not easy to get it right. It is, you know, it's a challenge. It's a constant iteration, test and learn. I think we said before, you know, you're always evolving that process. So tech's important, but it's not everything. I think to come back to another point that was raised before, like what's really important and what a lot of people are saying in the report is like storytelling. So it's more important now than ever to tell the story of your organization, because if people are feeling the squeeze in their pocket, why is your organization the organization that they should be giving to? You know, it's a competitive environment now. So donor stewardship is really key. And that's as important as having the tech infrastructure in place is being able to articulate that story. I don't think that's new necessarily, but it is something that we saw coming out of the report that, you know, this is great, but it only works when it's married with that sort of coherent storytelling.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with the storytelling piece. I think, so I mentioned, so obviously within mass participation, you have the physical and the virtual side of things. And I think one of the great things about this year is that we've actually been able to get all of our incredible supporters together at these events, where we can listen to their stories in person, and actually really bring everyone together as a celebration of everything that they've been working towards. So obviously at GOSH, we have all these incredibly brave patient families, and we're at our physical events, we can bring them together and actually talk to them and they can have fun together. And it's just a bit of a celebration, I guess. And I think that storytelling part of it is so, so important. 100% agree.
Can I just say, I find it very refreshing that a senior manager at a tech company has said that tech is not the only answer. Well done. I mean, it is a large answer, but you're right, it's not the only one. And you know, in my role as head of individual giving legacies, we still invest, you know, quite a lot in direct mail. And then you know, as long as people open the envelope, then you have this captive audience, and then you are on trial for your storytelling. And we've got to all get better at it because of the economy, because of various reasons, and people tightening their belts. And that is so, so key, is to get to know the people that we help, and you know, inspire them to tell their stories, and for us to get better at telling those stories, and perhaps even being more stark in the reality of what these people are facing, and then why it's so important that the reader of this slightly old-fashioned envelope and letter is inspired to donate. It's that storytelling is so key. I completely agree.
Yeah, and I think that's where, like, as the tech representative, like, you're using the tool to do that better. So, like, when's the time to send the email or send the direct mail piece? Like, how do we target and measure response and aggregate that data to analyze what's going on? Having the tech is great, but it's got to be used in that sort of thoughtful way. You know, the analogy that we've used in the past is that it's almost like me going and buying a drill. Like, I don't really want a drill. I'm trying to hang a picture on the wall. And that's what the tool is there to help you do that, is to help you achieve that end result. The tech is not the end result in itself.
Have you noticed a sort of change in what donors have been expecting over the last sort of year? I know that donors change as much as fundraising does, because that's what we're changing it for, right? But yeah, is there a change in expectations there at all?
Sorry, I'll lose that one too.
Anyone really, if anyone has an answer. it might be a big question.
I think donors, and I think, well, I don't think this just applies to donors nowadays, but probably everybody in this modern world, it's about people want that immediate gratification. And I think that's something that ties into that storytelling piece and that stewardship piece, is that if someone registers for an event, they want to immediately get that confirmation email and immediately be put on that journey and to have that touch point with the charity. And I think that's where tech and that storytelling comes together, so that we make sure that we are giving the supporters all the information that they need, but also all of the inspiration that they need at their fingertips. But I think that also applies to, for example, like fundraising incentives. People want answers straight away. I think there's just a bit more of a demand from the donors. And I think they almost maybe expect a bit more from charities now, because everyone, especially if they are donating, they feel that they're doing something good, so they want something back sometimes. And they are, and everyone's struggling with money at the moment, so they want to make sure that they're whether it's £1 or whether it's £100, they want to know that their money is going towards a worthwhile cause and that their money is being used appropriately. So I think quite fairly, actually, the donors have demands that we need to meet.
Thank you. So let's go look forward to, I guess, 2023. Feels weird saying 2023 already. So what do we think fundraising will look like? Is there any predictions that you feel like you can make? Again, open to the floor, whoever has a really good prediction. I'm asking you all to tell the future here. I realise it's a big ask.
I think from my field, mass participation, I think my prediction is that it'll be mainly just figuring out how virtual and physical events can sit alongside each other. I think that's the big thing. We've got all these challenge events coming back, like London Marathon. We're really excited to be Charity of the Year for next year, and that's obviously a really big thing for us. But it's how can we get that to sit alongside all of the other things that we're doing, and all the virtual things that we're doing, and then how it sits alongside diversification as well. But I think the most interesting thing that I'll be looking to see for next year is how, yeah, those physical and virtual elements work alongside each other.
Brilliant. James, what about you? Any predictions you can see coming in the future?
I'm generally a glass half full person. It is hard to be overly optimistic about fundraising for next year for the very obvious reasons: increased energy bills, cost of living crisis, and so on. But also, you know, dare I say, the slight chaos that's going on at government level at the moment. And you know, even that could affect things. A lot of charities, and I'm sure, you know, this features in reports, a large part of their income comes from statutory grants. You know, who knows what's going to happen with those, given, you know, potential change. We could very easily have general election, we could have continued chaos. So it's not just the, you know, the disposable income of our donors that is a problem. It could be more than that. So that could put certain income lines at risk. Therefore, you know, go back to Emily's point earlier, diversification is absolutely key. I think we will see, sadly, more cancellations from regular givers, cancelling their direct debits, that sort of thing. You know, there may be, though, some supporters out there who look at it differently and worry about their favourite charities going under, and that is the hope. And, you know, certainly we, and I'm sure many, many other charities, want to look after our warm supporters even more, and write to them and you know, and write to them through email or post, not just about asking for money, but updates on the charity. And for example, we put something out around the Queen's Platinum Jubilee and her association with our charity as patron, just for information. And we sadly had to do a very similar thing after Her Majesty died. And people would donate. We didn't ask them to, but they would. And it's very, very interesting. And getting to know who are the warmest of those warm supporters is, you know, a bit of a project for us at the moment, really looking after them as much as we can with limited resource. You know, Phil, you'll probably know that we have a relatively new CRM. It happens to be a Blackboard product, and that's something we're working on. Not very easy for us to do as yet, because it's early days, but really focusing on those warm supporters is going to be key. Mass participation events, you know, as Emily has hinted at, I think will be tough. And the thing about it is, it's the recruitment side, really. And I know people who'd love to do more, you know, 5Ks, 10Ks, marathons, bike rides, etc. But they don't sign up because they're nervous about asking their friends to sponsor, because they know their friends are struggling financially and so on. And that is very hard to do anything about, other than, you know, working harder. And I think that's the thing that we've all got to do next year, is work harder in every single area, whether that's, you know, an aspect of fundraising or comms and digital in particular, all of us. And what I'd love to see is more charities not putting fundraising first. That's the wrong way of putting it. We should always put our beneficiaries first, but really elevating the importance of fundraising internally. You know, this sort of culture that some charities have, and I'm very jealous that, you know, everyone is a fundraiser. We've got to do that more, I believe. What else might happen in 2023? I'm hoping some stability, actually, because the world has gone a bit mad, and the world going mad does not necessarily help us as fundraisers.
Absolutely. There is nothing that I feel certain of in terms of making a prediction for next year after the last couple. But when we do look at the report, like what people are concerned about and what challenges people expect, then there's no surprises in the first couple of them. It's that sort of the macroeconomic picture, all of the things that James and Emily were just discussing around, you know, challenges recruiting and those sorts of things, like adapting to new ways of fundraising post-pandemic. All of those things are still very real challenges for people. There were some more interesting findings that were sort of third and fourth on the list of like what people were concerned about. The third of those was retaining and recruiting fundraising talent. This was interesting for us because back in 2020, this was cited as a problem by only 17% of organisations. So that put it somewhere sort of around the 10th, 15th in the list, you know, just rolling around there at the bottom as a relatively minor concern. This year, that's increased to being a challenge for 42% of organisations, you know, keeping and retaining the best staff, the right skills at your organisation. And I think that potentially ties to, you know, two ways of looking at, you know, the cost of living crisis. Yes, it's impacting our donors, our supporters, which they're able to do or to give, but it's impacting our people at the organisation as well. You know, is that forcing people to look at other opportunities? Is it forcing people to, you know, reevaluate what's really important to them, not necessarily just monetarily, but culture, learning, the fulfilment that you get out of the mission when optimism is not necessarily high. So that's a real significant change. And there's something that I think we want to do some more to understand what is driving that change. In more happy news, I suppose, is that the fourth on the list was recovering from the pandemic. Now, that's still fourth on the list as something to worry about. So it's not gone away, but it's declined fairly significantly from like a concern for 70% of people down to 40% of people. So again, that idea of the resilience of the sector, you know, less people are less concerned about the impact of the pandemic. We have uncovered or found ways of dealing with those challenges. It's not over, it's not finished. And, you know, it's going to change some things probably permanently around how we operate, but it's less of a concern for people now and around the pandemic than sort of the more macroeconomic situation that we're now looking at with all of the other challenges that are potentially coming our way. So there are some interesting things that people are concerned about, and those are the things that are top of the list, sort of generally, broadly speaking, that people feel are issues for them. So that's a massive cop-out because I'm not giving you that. I think I'm giving you some aggregated data from the report. But those are the challenges that we're seeing emerge.
That's lovely. It's quite nice to hear there's some like hope, isn't there? And like, you know, charities are resilient and they'll get, you know, through crises as they have done before, like the pandemic. I mean, that was unprecedented is such an overused word these days, but it really was. and it is. And so it's just nice to hear that there's, you know, there's hope on the horizon. Charities, like, they're the most adaptable sector, I think. So I think that's really hopeful. Thank you so much for everyone for joining me. It's been a really great and really productive conversation, I think. So that's really exciting. And we'll put the link to the status of UK fundraising report in the episode summary. And yeah, thank you for listening. Please make sure to rate and subscribe because it helps other people find us. And we have lots of other episodes on everything from fundraising to cybersecurity on the Charity Digital podcast episode list. And yeah, thank you to James, Emily and Phil for like joining me. It's been really great to hear all about your expertise and experience. Like, thank you very much.
No worries. Thank you.
Thank you, Emily.
Thank you. We hope you enjoyed this Charity Digital podcast. The views, thoughts and opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not represent the views, thoughts and opinions of Charity Digital. The material and information presented here is for general information purposes only. Thanks for listening.